On the show today, Moscow is attacked again.
We were walking there, and then suddenly there was this explosion, and we immediately ran. There were shards of glass, and then smoke rising. Then the security services started running that way.
Plus, a friend of the show, wounded in the Donetsk region.
But he has a very serious injury, so the shrapnel got through under his rib on the right and stopped in the area of the left rib. But it also affected the intestine, liver and lungs.
And later in the program, a close look at the Russia-China relationship. And we visit a Los Angeles cafe serving up Ukrainian home cooking. Today is Tuesday, August 1st. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. An update from the battlefield coming up shortly. Now, though, the Russian military said its anti-aircraft units have thwarted another Ukrainian attack early on Tuesday and downed drones targeting Moscow. One drone crashed into the same high-rise tower that was also hit in a drone attack just a few days ago. Reuters' Joel Flynn reports.
A drone struck a high-rise in Moscow on Tuesday in what Russian officials said was a fresh Ukrainian, quote, terrorist attack, after the same building was hit during another alleged drone attack on Sunday. Video obtained by Reuters showed the impact on an area of the tower's glass facade on the 21st floor, according to Moscow's mayor. In a statement on the Telegram messaging app, Russia's defense ministry said, quote, an attempted terrorist attack by the Kyiv regime with lethal drones was thwarted. It said its forces downed two drones in suburbs west of the city center, and that the military's anti-aircraft interference caused a third drone to crash out of control into the building at the Moskva City business complex. These witnesses were by the building when it was struck.
We were going to see the tower where the explosion happened the day before yesterday, and people showed us where it happened. We were walking there, and then suddenly there was this explosion, and we immediately ran. There were shards of glass and then smoke rising. Then the security services started running that way. The shards were really big.
Officials said no injuries were reported, while TASS news agency said emergency services had found debris from the falling drone and will be sent for analysis. It comes after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky hit out at Russia on Monday night over more deadly strikes on his country. In his nightly video address, Zelensky said Russian missile strikes on his hometown in the south had killed a 10-year-old girl and her mother, among at least six people. He said it was an act of, quote, terrorism, and called on allies to support Ukraine with long-range weapons, quote, for the defense of the normal life of Ukrainians, our children.
That's Reuters' Joel Flynn with that story. Ukrainian fighters near the front line in the southeast told journalists from Reuters that in a recent push to retake a village, the Russian forces were waiting for them. It's a glimpse into a counteroffensive that moves slowly and at a great cost. Jillian Kitchener produced this report.
This video released by the Ukrainian army shows its soldiers in battle near the village of Staromayorska, which was recaptured from Russian forces last week. The Marines who fought in the battle, Ukraine's biggest advance in weeks, said the fighting was brutal, their timing was off, and that the invaders were ready for them.
The Russians waited for us. They shot anti-tank weapons and grenade launchers at us. My car drove over an anti-tank mine, but everything is well. The vehicle held the hit, and everyone was alive. We unloaded and ran towards the cover, because the most important is to find cover and then move on.
Kyiv's current counteroffensive is backed by billions of dollars in Western military aid, equipment, and training. But war stories of the Battle of Staromayorska, recounted to Reuters near the front line in southeastern Ukraine, give an indication of why this highly anticipated operation has proven slower and bloodier than expected.
We advance slowly but surely. What can I say? They shoot. Everything flies. It was scary, but we moved on. Nobody backed up. Everyone did a great job. Many of us didn't come back, but we mostly preserved our strength.
The Russians have had months to prepare their fortifications and sow minefields. while the Ukrainians lack the air superiority that their NATO allies normally expect in their training drills. Ukrainian commanders say the deliberately slower pace is needed to avoid high casualties. Russia on Monday announced that Ukraine's counteroffensive was not going as planned. Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu, speaking at a military conference in Moscow, said Ukraine was, quote, desperately hurling new forces into attacks on Russian positions, but had failed to advance.
Over the past month, due to the successful actions of our troops, the enemy's losses totaled more than 28,000 servicemen.
Shoigu said Ukraine was wasting billions of dollars of weapons supplied by the West.
Amid the failure of the so-called counteroffensive, the Kyiv regime, backed by its Western sponsors, has focused on carrying out terrorist attacks on civilian infrastructure.
On Monday, two people were killed and four injured, according to Russian officials, in Ukrainian shelling of the city of Donetsk, which is under Russian control. Some 250 miles to the west, smoke billowed from a gaping hole in an apartment building, seen here in video posted on social media by President Volodymyr Zelensky. According to Ukraine, a Russian missile attack on the city Zelensky grew up in killed at least six people and wounded dozens more.
That's Reuters' Jillian Kitchener reporting for us. I'll have an in-depth look at the Russia-China relationship in a moment. Now, though, a friend of the show is badly wounded near the front lines, and more of our look at military developments as Kharkiv and Kherson have come under intense attacks. I'm joined by Anna Chernikova in Kyiv for more.
Yeah, unfortunately, as we already discussed, the city of Kherson is under everyday shelling, and today was another really bad attack of the city of Kherson, which targeted medical institution and a doctor and a nurse, unfortunately, were killed. And what we can see in general that the whole city is the target. So residential areas, infrastructure facilities, civilian infrastructure, construction facilities particularly, and unfortunately, medical and educational institutions. And if we talk about the city of Kharkiv, situation is similar, very intensive shelling of the city. It's yesterday, very late in the evening, the attack with drones started on the city of Kharkiv. Again, the target was educational institution and also sport complex.
Now, Anna, you mentioned attacks on civilian infrastructure, a sports complex, a school. How many civilians are still around in these towns? Have most people evacuated by now?
In Kherson, a lot of people were remaining in the city during occupation by Russian forces, and now they're not willing to leave as well. A lot of them saying that, well, it's our home, and we went through occupation, we went through shelling, we will wait for better times here, we're not going to go. But a lot of people, of course, left because, well, especially people with children.
Now, Kharkiv and Kherson, terrible as it is in those places, it's only two cities. Can you give us an update on the rest of the front line?
Yeah, and actually, we have some updates which also were confirmed by the British intelligence. So it's not only Ukrainian general staff information. We have, again, as we already discussed, we have two main zones at the front line right now. It's the Zaporizhia region in the southeast part of the front line, and also Donetsk region in the east part of the front line. And Ukrainian forces have certain advances there and certain success. Russian forces definitely created a very strong defense lines, and Russian forces also are trying to fight back and capture the territories back. But for the moment, there are no reports and confirmations of any success from the Russian side.
Finally, today, Anna, last question I want to talk about. We all know that war is dangerous, particularly for the journalists who cover it. And as journalists, this is never a conversation we want to have. But I understand that one of your friends and colleagues was hurt covering the war for Deutsche Welle. This is a cameraman that has done some work with you on some VOA projects in the past as well. Can you tell us who this person is, what they've done, and what's happened to him?
We have a couple of cameramen working for VOA here in Ukraine, particularly with me on my projects as well. And one of the cameramen, Eugene Shilko, he also works with Deutsche Welle. He was in the Donetsk region. He was there with Deutsche Welle correspondent as well, and team in general. No one were hurt but him. He was injured by a piece of shrapnel from Russian cluster munitions. What we know for sure, what I know from him personally, as I talked to him already, he is currently stable, but he has a very serious injury. So the shrapnel got through under his rib on the right and stopped in the area of the left rib. But it also affected the intestine, liver, and lungs. And now he is already in Kyiv, remaining in the hospital and getting all needed help and medical treatment. But his condition is, again, stable, but definitely it's very difficult. And as we are talking, today is his birthday, so we all hope that he will get better as soon as possible and will be back on the project with us.
Well, certainly all of us here at VOA in Washington wish him the best, and we hope to be able to talk to him soon. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. Ukrainian home cooking in Los Angeles, coming up shortly. Now, as Russia finds itself more and more isolated on the world stage, its relationship with China has become more important. But does this only serve to benefit China? I'm joined by Sergei Radchenko, a professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies.
In the 1950s, the two countries were very close. They were military allies, but then in the 1960s, their relationship started to deteriorate sharply, and by 1969, they were on the brink of war, at which point the Chinese, of course, turned to the Americans. Famously, there was a meeting between President Richard Nixon and Mao Zedong in February 1972, and then, you know, the rest is history. We know this story. But what we now can see also from the Chinese documents is the internal Chinese logic in pursuing rapprochement with the United States. It was very utilitarian. So I take that as the starting point for a discussion of Chinese grand strategy. And the bottom line here is simply to say that China is best at looking at its own interests or after its own interests. And if Vladimir Putin and Russia thinks that he can count on China through thick and thin to bail him out, etc., well, you know, he may be right to a certain extent. But when China, when the Chinese leaders feel it's no longer in their interest, they'll dump him, of course. In other words, the Chinese are very utilitarian in their approach to Russia. While Russia, out of desperation, is becoming much more reliant on China, effectively becoming something like, Chinese vassal state. I hesitate to use that word, but in many ways, it's Putin's own creation.
Well, how so?
Well, Russia is dependent on China in economic terms. Putin, because of obviously the war in Ukraine, has cut himself off from the West, or has been cut off from the West, obviously. And that cost him his leverage with China. So now the Chinese are able to drive a hard bargain in their economic relationship. Putin has been desperate, for example, to redirect some of the gas that he can no longer sell to Europe to China, but the Chinese are not buying it. You know, the Chinese are saying, well, no, thank you very much. And that just serves to highlight Russia's unfavorable position in this relationship, that Russia has maneuvered itself into a corner where it has no way out except to basically rely on China even more. Is that something that is in Russia's long-term interest? I don't think so. I think that is actually very bad for Russia.
Do you think that the Chinese are taking advantage of Putin and of Russia?
Well, look, if I were Chinese leaders, you know, I would be acting in exactly the same way. I mean, the Chinese are, as I say, they're good at looking after their own interests, and what they're interested in is having Russia for a partner that takes away some of the hostility that they would otherwise experience vis-a-vis the West, for example. And obviously, we know of the tense relations between China and the West at the moment. Well, Russia is something of a lightning rod here and is taking the West's attention away a little bit from China. So that is good for China. Having Russia for a junior economic partner, is that bad for China? No, it's good for China. I think they will exploit this relationship to its utmost. The question I'm asking is, what is in this relationship for Russia that makes Putin so desperate to cling on to the status of a junior partner with China, which is at odds with Russia's long-term national interest?
Let's talk about that. Why is Russia holding on to this position now?
Putin himself cornered Russia. Putin himself put himself in a position where he has lost leverage with China. What would be in Russia's national interest? You know, what Russia would benefit from is to have a fairly reasonable relationship with the West, a fairly reasonable relationship with China. In other words, in a world that is moving towards something like a Sino-Western Cold War 2.0, Russia would benefit from being in a position of neutrality, trading with both, maintaining a positive relationship with both. Instead, what do we see? Putin has invaded Ukraine. He is breaking off relationship with the West, or has already broken it off, pursuing completely self-defeating policy with regard to both Ukraine and the West, and is making Russia ever more dependent on China economically and increasingly politically as well. Is that something that is compatible with Russia's so-called great power status? Well, I don't see this necessarily as being in Russia's long-term interest. The silver lining for the West, you know, there's a great apprehension in the West, and that's another point I highlighted in the article about the Sino-Russian relationship and how there's this emergence of a great alliance of some kind. I see limitations to this alliance. I don't see an alliance at all. What I see is a dependent relationship between Russia and China, where Russia is in the dependent position, China is in the position to dictate. China is not at the moment using all the leverage it has to dictate what it wants to do with Russia. You know, I do not see how this kind of relationship can be sustained over the long term.
Sergei Radchenko is a professor of international relations at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Professor, thanks for your time today. Thanks for your analysis.
No problem. Thanks for calling.
Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Ukrainian doctors have been seeing a lot of abdominal wounds in military and civilian patients. Some U.S. doctors are stepping in to help their Ukrainian colleagues and treat these wartime injuries. Anna Kostachenko has the story.
Alexander Fedurko was diagnosed with prostate cancer 2 years ago. And when treatment hadn't helped, he had a series of surgeries. He received a stoma, an artificial opening on the abdomen that allows waste to leave the digestive system. Today, physicians from Northwestern Memorial Hospital in the U.S. city of Chicago are checking on his progress. The American doctors came to Kyiv, Ukraine, thanks to Dr. Vitaly Poilin, a Kyiv-born colon and rectal surgeon who moved to the U.S. over 3 decades ago. After the war started, he launched a program at the Kyiv National Cancer Institute that would allow U.S. and Ukrainian doctors to share knowledge and experience.
We bring people for a month at a time and pay all the way through, and then kind of hopefully bring it in with some new ideas and slowly trying to change the system.
Dr. Poilin has treated many stoma patients. His experience has proved valuable during the war in Ukraine. Russian shelling has wounded both civilians and members of the military, and these patients often end up needing a stoma. That is why it is crucial to share this information now, explains Poilin.
Because a lot of injuries are in the torso because they don't have body armor, so there's many more stomas as they should be in a trauma setting.
Physician assistant Rachel Hindy has more than 8 years of experience consulting stoma patients in Chicago, and she's happy to share her knowledge with Ukrainians. As she explains, a stoma can significantly restrict a person's life, but it need not prevent the patient from leading an active lifestyle.
Beginning, it's difficult for anyone, but then as time goes on and they learn, there was one patient that said that she likes to swim and she thought that she couldn't swim with an ostomy, but you actually can swim with an ostomy.
In future visits, the Chicago doctors and caregivers plan to work with doctors in other regions of Ukraine. For Anna Kostuchenko in Kyiv, Ukraine, NRI's VOA News.
And finally, today we're off to Southern California, which is now home to more than 17,000 Ukrainian refugees. One of them is Olena Kochetkova, who fled to the U.S. after a rocket strike killed her husband and destroyed their Mariupol bakery. VOA's Svetlana Pristinska has the story of how one new Ukrainian business has helped other immigrants along the way.
Olena Kochetkova is chef and co-owner of a new Los Angeles restaurant called Mom, Please. After her husband had been killed in a rocket attack in Mariupol, she fled Ukraine. Less than a year later, she and her family have built a thriving business from what started as a way of coping with their grief.
When we got here, we were living with three families in one house. There were many children. I was making a lot of dumplings and pies for them. They all said, "Mom, please." That's how the restaurant was named.
Their business selling dumplings and sweets online was such a success that they moved to this former pizzeria. Co-owner and daughter-in-law Ina Kochetkova says their customers are mostly Ukrainians, Americans, and Chinese.
Chinese clients love dumplings, and this is so interesting to them. How we make Ukrainian dumplings with cherry or cabbage, for example.
The traditional Ukrainian menu includes handmade dumplings known as vareniki, crepes, cottage cheese pancakes, cabbage rolls, soups, and desserts. Ina Kochetkova credits a strong team of Ukrainians, Americans, and Mexicans for the restaurant's success. Newly arrived Ukrainians, Katerina Gurova and Diana Surhuchova, work as baristas.
I'm incredibly grateful for this place because it's very important to have someone by your side who supports you and speaks the same language.
It is very hard sometimes for immigrants to find new friends. This place has true Ukrainian spirit, music, food, and friendly people. It is cool that I also have a chance here to meet some other communities and introduce my culture to them.
Olena Buchinsky is a first-generation Ukrainian-American.
They didn't just say cherry vareniki, they are actually the sour cherries, which are the correct way of having vareniki made.
Olena Kochetkova reflects on how far she has come since the dark day in Mariupol when she lost her husband and their bakery.
I never expected that far from our home our food would be so popular. I'm very glad people love my recipes and it's given me inspiration to keep going.
Going forward, the Kochetkov family is looking to open a chain of restaurants and expand their frozen food business. Svetlana Pristinska for VOA News, Los Angeles.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage of Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.